This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Bonnie North. Whether it's the travel ban or the temporary suspension of refugee admissions, immigration issues are at the forefront these days. While today the United States and the world grapple with refugees from Africa and the Middle East, in the 1930s and 40s, the international community faced an increasing number of European Jews fleeing Nazi Germany.
Born in Hanover, Germany in 1933, Fred Amram is one such survivor. He was 5 years old when he witnessed the looting and burning of Jewish shops and beatings of Jews during Kristallnacht. His family escaped to the Netherlands, then Belgium, and then onto an ocean liner to the United States in 1939, just at the start of World War II. He stayed alive while cousins, aunts, and uncles perished.
He wrote a book of stories called We're in America Now, a Survivor's Stories, about his experiences in both his early years in Europe and as a refugee in New York City. He explains to Lake Effect's Mayon Silver what it was like when he arrived in America.
It was really scary. It's scary because one has to learn a new language. I was a student at the time, and I didn't know what my classmates were saying or what the teacher was saying, and there's a different culture. The European culture is different from American culture, so there are different ways of behaving and of relating between people. I would think that for the refugees coming currently, it's even harder because European culture and American culture, while different, are fairly close. People coming from Somalia or from the Middle East are experiencing a very much different culture. So that must be about twice as scary as it was for me.
How important was it for you and your family to have support from places like the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society?
I don't know that we could have made it without the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. I can't imagine it. They not only helped us settle financially, that is, they gave us some start money at the time. It wasn't much. We received $5 each, three of us, and that was going to hold us over for a while, albeit it was a start. And they put us up in a pretty dingy hotel room, but it was better than being homeless. I would assume and I hope that there are agencies available for Somalis coming in now and for Middle Eastern people were coming in. There is another part that we forget, that the people who are coming are refugees. These are not immigrants who at their leisure want to come to a new country. Refugees are people who are seeking refuge. Refugees are running away. So in my case, we were running from the Gestapo. We were running from death. The people coming from the Middle East now, are running away from terrible war and torture and horrible situation. So not only is one adjusting to a new language and a new culture, and usually one is poor because one has no work and no connections yet, one is terrified because of what just came before, where one is running from.
What were some of the things that you experienced in Germany when you were a child that caused your family to flee and become refugees?
Well, I think one of the worst was that Jews were excluded from almost every public place at that time. And one of the public places was the air raid shelter. At the time, the RAF, the Royal Air Force, was bombing Germany, and in the early days when we could use the air raid shelter, it was a safe place to be, or it felt safe. It really wasn't, but it felt safe, and there was some camaraderie. But once the sign said "Juden verboten," Jews forbidden, we had to watch the bombs from our fourth floor apartment. So we were not quite at eye level with the airplanes. We could look over the city and see the fires and the bombs falling. And imagine, that's a scary experience. The Gestapo came regularly.
And you were about 5 years old when Kristallnacht happened?
Yes, right. That was in 1938, November of 38. I was about 5 years old, and I watched it from the balcony of our apartment. Watched our synagogue burning, and watched the beatings of Jews on the street.
Well,
it was a pretty terrifying experience.
And, you know, this book is a collection of short stories, and most are written from a child's perspective, from when you were a child. How hard was it? What was it like going back to those memories and to that time period?
You mean while writing the book?
Yes.
The experience in writing it wasn't entirely new in that I had always told my children the stories. I wanted my family, as they were growing, to know what happened, lest we forget, you know, this never again. And so they always knew, and they read about the Holocaust. Writing about it was a little harder because I had to work through some details to make a story into a good story. One has to provide some details. And so I had to really dissect the experiences, and some scary feelings did come up. And even now, sometimes when I read my stories in public, I suddenly tear up at some particular point that's, to me, scary, emotional, or nostalgic, even when I think of some good things that happened to me. Some of my colleagues say that I tear up because I haven't processed completely. Others say that I'm tearing up because my writing is so good that it really moves you.
Well, yes, it's probably a combination of both. Well, and you know, interestingly, you wrote a chapter about going back to Hanover when you were an adult in 1960. And I wanted to ask you about that because that's close to Dachau concentration camp. And you called the chapter Home Again. So I'm wondering, how is it that after all of what you experienced as a child in Germany that you were able to think of Germany as home?
Oh, that's a fascinating question. Do you know, I'm bilingual. I'm also bicultural. People ask me, do you think in English or in German? Well, now I think most of the time in English, but there are some words and some thoughts that really are culturally German. In a sense, my roots are German, and if someone asks my nationality, I will proudly say I'm an American citizen. But deep in my heart, my first language was German. My first culture was German. My mother and I bonded in Germany. A child's initial bonding is so important in who one becomes as an adult. I started out as a German, and so it is, in a sense, home again. We may want to put the home in quotation marks.
When you went there to Dachau, you talked about the experience of finding the camp and speaking to Germans that were around there. What did you find when you went to Germany?
Well, one of the stories that I tell in the book is when I went to the Hofbräuhaus to drink beer in Munich, I met a man a few years older than me, and we spoke in German, and I asked him what he was doing at the time of the war, and he said proudly he had joined the Hitlerjugend, the Hitler Youth, and how much he liked it and some of the bad things he had done in beating up on Jews and such. And I asked him why he joined, and he said that they offered him a motorcycle. Well, he was 15 at the time. Imagine a 15-year-old being offered a motorcycle. He said later on that he didn't like it as well because as the war was going badly for the Germans, he had to go to war, and he didn't like that at all. And I said, why did you stay in the Hitlerjugend? And he said, oh, they let me keep the motorcycle. When I talk to American high schoolers, which I do often, I ask them, what would you do for a motorcycle? Would you join an organization that beats up on Jews and that does evil things to people who are in a minority? These are relevant stories.
There were a few Germans that lived close to the concentration camp, said they smelled a bad smell, and you asked them what they thought it was.
Yes. We had just come home from Dachau, from the gas chamber. We had looked at the crematoria and the gas chamber and all of the death instruments. And we went back to our B&B, and I asked the owner if she had noticed that there was the smoke coming. And, oh, yes, we saw the smoke, and it was terrible. There was all this debris that fell on our windowsills. And I asked what she thought it was. Oh, we didn't know what it was. Well, what they were smelling and what they were seeing was the ashes of the dead Jews. And they had to have known. And they could have not known. They were either lying to me or to themselves or both. But there was a lot of that we experienced in touring Germany and Austria. There was a great deal of denial. There's some literature about the 8 stages of genocide, all genocides. And the 8th stage in all of the literature is always denial. We didn't do it. If we did it, it was unintentional. We're not guilty. And that's a very sad conclusion to all genocides.
So
nothing is learned.
So as a witness to everything that happened with family members that died in the Holocaust, do you education for young people and speak with them about it?
A lot, yes.
One of the main pillars of your stories is your father, who you call Papa in the book. And
yes,
you model a lot after him and his sort of way of seeing the world. Can you tell me what his favorite moment, when you asked him what his favorite moment was in his life?
Yeah, you're referring to a story in the book when I did ask him that. And he had to think hard because there are lots of wonderful moments, like having your son born, having your son educated in a new country. But he said his favorite moment was when he saw the Statue of Liberty.
And so the Statue of Liberty obviously means something. You know, there's a, you know, it's a symbol of taking in refugees, taking in immigrants, and the United States has stood for that. How do you think your father and you as a Holocaust survivor look at the current climate of how we're dealing with refugees and immigrants?
I wrote an op-ed piece for our local newspaper here in Minneapolis, in which I told the story of how we had to register as Jews in Germany, and how the current situation suggests that Muslims may have to register. And my wife and I have agreed that we would immediately register as Muslims. And if all Americans were immediately to register as Muslims, then Muslims couldn't be isolated. If that had happened in Germany, Jews couldn't have been isolated. So how do I feel about the current immigration situation? The same way. I think that immigrants need some vetting, of course. Some people might try to come in who desirable in some ways. I think in the long run, we can't prevent all undesirable people from coming in. But if we don't let these frightened people come, they will die. If in 1934 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 1938 and 39, Jews had been allowed to come to the United States in larger numbers, and to other countries as well, in larger numbers, there wouldn't have been 6 million Jews killed. There would have been maybe 500,000. But these people couldn't escape. And it wasn't until after 1938 that there was this emphasis in Germany to kill. At first, Hitler really wanted all the Jews to leave. But the Jews couldn't leave because they had nowhere to go. No, they were not accepted. And all of those Jews who wanted to leave and couldn't, most of those Jews ended up in gas chambers, ended up being dead or starved. Yeah, I think we owe it to people who are destitute to help.
Well, Fred Amram, I really appreciate you sharing this story, and thank you for sharing your story.
Well, thank you for letting me share it with you.
Fred Amram was a refugee from Eastern Europe in the 1930s. He now lives in Minnesota. His book is called We're in America Now, A Survivor's Stories, and he'll talk about it Sunday afternoon at Boswell Book Company. Fred Amram spoke with Lake Effect's Mayon Silver.